Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
So this is a 17th century Dutch panel painting by Egon Vandernier.
It's called Portrait of a Man and a Woman in Their Interior, and it's been part of the Museum of Fine Arts collection since 1941. And as Victoria Reed, curator of provenance at the MFA, describes the painting, it's a scene of a wealthy couple.
I imagine they've got this beautiful Eastern carpet draped over their table. They have very elaborate wallpaper. They have a nice painting hanging over their mantle. They have some fruit on the table.
The light pouring in
through
the tall window.
The light comes in through
the
window on the left, yeah, and it's signed down here in the lower right.
Reed can so beautifully imagine the lives and stories behind the painting because that is essentially what she is paid to do. As the curator of provenance, she is the MFA's art sleuth, the woman charged with tracing the true histories of the museum's paintings, clarifying the lines of ownership often obfuscated by theft and war. The Vandernier painting is a special case. In a fashion perhaps appropriate to the mysteries of the Dutch masters, the painting presented three unanswered questions. One, was it stolen from a Jewish art dealer by the Nazis? Two, how did it end up on the American art market? And three, what should the MFA do about it? The answers put the MFA at the leading edge of provenance research, as I found out when I recently stood before the painting and puzzled out its story with Victoria Reed.
In fact, we purchased this in 1941 on the New York art market. We didn't have any knowledge of its 20th century provenance, and in 1943, a French art dealer who had come over to the United States during the war visited the museum and told the curator that he recognized this painting, that he had once owned this painting in the 1930s, and that he had sold it to someone named Walter Westfeld.
Westfeld was a Jewish art dealer, and he lived in Dusseldorf.
Westfeld had been arrested by Nazi authorities. His belongings were auctioned off by an auctioneer in Cologne, and he was sent to a concentration camp.
And the MFA first acquired it in 1941.
That's right.
So right in the middle of
2 years later.
Of the war, okay.
Yeah. And I started here in 2003, and I remember trying to locate a family member, someone who would know who Walter Westfeld was, any more information about him. Actually, I just did a Google search for Walter Westfeld, which wasn't something that maybe in the late 90s or around 2001 would have thought to do, and just found little snippets that he had opened an art gallery in 1920. And in 2004, we received an email from Walter Westfeld's nephew, who's living in the United States and who saw this painting on our website and who offered many more details about his uncle's life and about his uncle's career.
So, question one, was the Vandernier stolen by the Nazis from a Jewish art dealer? Answer, yes. But when?
Walter Westfeld opened this gallery in 1920. Because he was Jewish, in the mid-30s, he was told he could no longer earn a living as an art dealer, and he was forced to close his gallery. The gallery closed in May of 1936. He continued to buy and sell paintings in violation of German law. He was able to smuggle some assets out of Germany, and in 1938, he was arrested for violating foreign exchange laws. He spent the rest of his life in captivity before being sent to Auschwitz, and the Nazis seized in 1938 all the works of art that they could find in his possession and auctioned it off.
Reed spent almost 7 years investigating the journey this painting took from World War II Europe to Boston. So, was the auction the answer to question number two? How did the Vandernier end up on the American market?
Now, the Vandernier painting was not in that sale.
There's still a big mystery, though, about if this painting was not in the auction, that where did it go?
Exactly, and that's the question. I believe that Westfeld had this painting as late as May of 1936. And that is because when he was forced to close his gallery, he was ordered to essentially liquidate his gallery stock. And he worked with a non-Jewish friend and colleague, a man named Kloecker, who opened a gallery in Dusseldorf, and he was officially authorized to sell off Westfeld's gallery stock. I believe the Kloecker Gallery opened around the same time that Westfeld's gallery closed. And there was an exhibition at the Kloecker Gallery in May of 1936 of paintings that clearly belonged to Walter Westfeld. And among the paintings mentioned in an exhibition announcement were a company scene by Eglon van der Neer. And it's true that that description in and of itself may not be sufficient to link it with this particular painting, but we have to consider that Westfeld's name was already associated with this painting and how many Eglon van der Neers were on the Dusseldorf art market at this time. Probably not very many. I think it's very likely that this is the painting in question. So we then have this gap because that's where the paper trail ends. And how could Westfeld have disposed of this painting in Nazi Germany when he was living outside the law? He was no longer authorized to make a living as an art dealer. And what are the different scenarios by which he could have given or sold this painting? Because where the paper trail ends in May 1936, it doesn't pick up again until the spring of 1941.
When it was purchased by the MFA. So if we were to have a CSI-type glass board in front of us right now, there'd be an image of Dutch master Eglon van der Neer. And a bright line connects him to a French art dealer named Robert Lubel, who then sold the painting to Walter Westlund, a Jewish gallery owner, who was arrested by the Nazis and died in Auschwitz. The connecting line then points to a man named Kloecker in 1936, and then to, well, nothing. As Victoria Reed says, the paper trail goes cold, leaving a 6-year gap in the story of the van der Neer painting, and leaving question number 2, how did the painting get from Germany to New York, and ultimately into the MFA's collection in 1941, frustratingly unanswerable.
So I don't know if it was sold through Kloecker when Kloecker was basically liquidating Westfeld's gallery stock. He could have sold it in Germany in 1936, 1937, 1938. There were some things that he kept in a bank vault in Amsterdam, which I believe were seized and sold off once the Germans invaded the Netherlands. He smuggled a large number of works of art into France with the assistance of Robert Lubel. Whether this painting was among the paintings smuggled into Paris, again, I don't know. I think that under the circumstances, it's hard to imagine a scenario by which he could have voluntarily sold this painting and received proceeds over which he had complete control. This was what he was doing in order to survive, and it was the activity for which he ultimately lost his life. So even though we couldn't answer the question of specifically how the painting got here, there was really a limited number of ways that it could have left his possession. And given those limited number of ways, the museum decided to reach a settlement with the heirs.
The MFA will not divulge the size of the settlement it reached with Walter Westlund's family. Similar van der Neers have recently sold for more than $500,000. But that does answer question number 3. What should the MFA do about suspect stolen art in its collection? The museum has been very proactive on this point. It's reached settlements on 3 paintings, including the van der Neer, and for 3 others, the MFA decided it wasn't the rightful owner and returned the paintings to family members who survived the Holocaust, according to the MFA's deputy director, Katie Getchell.
By having an active research program about the history of ownership of works of art in our collection, and more importantly, by posting those on our website in a way that's searchable for family members or others, we are opening ourselves up to more claims. But we feel that that is our responsibility, and it is our mission, and it is a commitment we have, and we have carried through on.
The reason why I ask is because just as we were driving in and we walked by the school's entrance, right, so there's like kids pouring into the MFA today, it makes me wonder, in the cases where paintings are returned to previous owners, many times they go back into private collections. So it's going from a place where the public can enjoy and learn from the works of art into private hands. That seems to be somewhat of a tension that the museum has to resolve.
Yes, and again, we deal with them on a case-by-case basis. So in the first painting we resolved in the year 2000, we very clearly acknowledged that there had been a forced sale and therefore the our ownership of the painting was invalid. However, the owners of the painting were adamant that they wanted the painting to stay at the MFA to tell the story, to give tribute to their ancestors, and to, very importantly, pay a credit to Boston, where their family found refuge. So they really felt strongly that they wanted that painting to stay in the museum's collection. So that's how that one was resolved. So they're really case by case. We'd love to keep everything in the museum's collection. It isn't always, for any number of reasons, the right answer for the claimant or for us.
Mm-hmm. You know, the story is so fascinating that it just makes you wonder, even just looking down this hallway,
yeah.
The provenance of every single painting that the yeah. museum has got must have an incredible story behind it.
Many of them do. I mean, each work of art has a biography, really. It has a life story. In particular, right now, we are dealing with a window of opportunity to address some of these questions about Holocaust-era provenance, World War II-era provenance, where we do still have family members alive who can answer some of these questions. And museum practices of the past in terms of acquisitions, nobody knowingly acquired Nazi-looted art, but I think that the standards for diligence have certainly changed over time, and it used to be that museums might acquire a work of art relying on the dealer for provenance information, the word of the dealer. And I think we've learned that that's not always good enough. We really need to uphold a much higher standard now. We need to ask questions about provenance, about export, about import. We need to find documentation, publications, make sure we do a very thorough check before we bring the object into the building, before we make it a part of the collection.
You can take a closer look at Vandernier's Portrait of a Man and a Woman in Their Interior at our website, radioboston.org.
Still ahead on the program, summertime can mean long walks in the woods, which can mean ticks and Lyme disease, but the guidelines for treatments are creating some anxiety for some parents. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.